Good morning, everybody. We made it safely back from vacation, obviously. It was wonderful. I've noticed this for quite some time, but now that we have three kids, it's become more apparent. I truly believe that grandparents have superpowers. We were there to visit my mom, who it's just incredible. They have this ability, and I believe it's called letting parents sleep. As they watch kids, it's marvelous, it's miraculous. If you are a grandparent, it's wonderful when it happens. When we got there, we left our house late Friday night so our kids can sleep. And so we didn't get to Grass Valley, we didn't get to Auburn until 6 in the morning around there. And so we woke up to my mom making pancakes for our kids, and it was amazing. Grandparents, you guys are the best. You have a way. It is incredible. You know, the song that we just sang, I want to read this over again, at least the first stanza. We're part of the family that's been born again, part of the family whose love knows no end. For Jesus has saved us and made us his own. Now we're a part of a family that's on its way home. As a part of that family, it is my job, and I feel like it's a very real part of my job, to connect people with our young adults. And one of the best ways to do this that I have found, one of the best ways to do this is not only through work and through service projects, but also through devotionals. It is a way that the young adults can come to your house. It is a way for you guys to visit and to worship with our youth. I am here to tell you, I am here to invite you to invite the young adults into your home. They don't bite. They don't destroy much. They take up very little space. We want to worship God with you in your home. You do not have to feed us. If you just want us to come over and worship with you, that's fine. If you want to feed us, I won't argue with you anymore. When I first got here, I made that pretty. I didn't want you guys to feed us, but I had to fight enough people to know that you guys want to feed us. So I will let you feed the young adults. It is important that you get to know them. It is important that they get to know you. There's a sign-up sheet in the back, and there's not a name on it. I want you guys to fill that up. And I don't want just parents of the young adults either. I want everybody, and if it gets filled up, we will start adding dates. We will start adding in Saturdays, Wednesdays. We can do this at 2 in the morning on Tuesday if you want. Hey, it'll just be me and probably Doug. We want to worship with you. We want to praise God with you. And the people who have had devotionals in their homes, I've only heard positive things, or they haven't told me any negative things yet. We want to worship with you guys, so please, I encourage you to invite the young adults over to your house. My topic today, what Dave has asked me to speak on, connects with that, this idea of family, this idea of connecting with each other. As you know, I have been harping on small groups for the last year and a half, constantly, I feel like. We're trying to develop small groups, and we're trying to make them unique to our congregation here. And we're trying to ask questions like, what will make them more effective? What will make them more encouraging to each other? And I have to ask this question over and over again. How can we build better bridges to each other? As a congregation, how can we build better connecting parts with one another? You know, I find this really encouraging about Churches of Christ. And I've been to many different churches, but I found this almost specific with Churches of Christ, that it is made largely of families, interconnected families, people who have grown up with each other for decades, people who have known each other for years, close-knit families and close-knit groups. And Ventura is no different. If anything, you guys are a poster child for what it's like to be a close-knit family unit here at the Ventura Church of Christ. But could we do better? Could we build better bridges with one another? And this morning, I want to use Jesus as an example of how we can do this better, of how we can build better relationships with one another, how we can do this church a little bit better. So I have to start again by asking more questions. Why did Jesus begin his ministry by choosing a small group of 12 highly dysfunctional people? Why did Jesus choose only 12? I imagine if Jesus wanted, he could have chosen 40. He could have chosen 24, 144. He could have chosen 1,000 people to follow after him, to be his disciples, to be his apostles. And I could tell you, if you gave me 144 people, handpicked, well-organized, I can build an amazing church. And I'm pretty sure most of you wouldn't make the cut, but it would be a pretty fantastic church. All right. All of you would probably make the cut. If you allowed me to choose 144 people and I was able to manufacture my own church, man, it would look just like me. It would be fantastic. It'd be hectic, spontaneous. Nothing would get done. Everyone would be wearing shorts and it would be glorious. But Jesus chose 12, only 12. And as Jesus is choosing these 12 individuals, Jesus makes us believe that he had to go out of his way to choose these people, that people weren't even flocking to him, that he had to go out and talk to these individuals and ask them, will you follow after me? And that wasn't the case in this culture. To be a rabbi meant you would have people come to you, asking you to be their master and for them to be your disciple. But Jesus only chose 12 dysfunctional, selfish men to start his small group. Can you imagine what that first meeting would have been like? As he had Matthew and Simon, as he had a zealot and a tax collector, as he had people who were overreactors, people who wanted to go out and change the world, and he had cowards and betrayers. Do you imagine that first small group as Jesus sat everybody down and gave them their mission statement, right? Like a corporate meeting, he told everybody, all right, guys, here's the plan. We're going to start changing the world. Imagine as this group of men got to know one another. As of Saturday, and I checked, you can go to my Facebook account and you can check, I have 913 friends, 913 of them. I was surprised by how many people I could choose from to be my friend, to start my own individual church, 913. I remember a while ago I checked and I had 700 friends. I can barely tell you 50 of their names. 913. You know, but regardless of how high that number gets, we can only achieve 150 close reciprocating relationships with one another. And it's amazing. There's actually a name for this called the Dunbar number, meaning that each one of us can only have or can only sustain 150 reciprocating relationships. Acquaintances, really, but still. People that we can look to and call friends. So even though I have over 900 people that I consider friends, realistically, there's only about 150 people that I can call or consider to be in a relationship with. And of that 150, there are generally 50 people that you can keep in contact with about once a month. And out of those 50, there are only 15 that you see weekly. And out of those 15, there are only 5 that you can have a deep, meaningful community with and which to depend upon. And we see this in how Jesus chooses his 12. And out of his 12, he chooses 3. We see Jesus demonstrating this to us, that not only would he draw in hundreds of people, but out of those hundreds, he would call 12 individuals to him. And out of those 12, he would connect personally and intimately with 3 of them. So we see even Jesus demonstrating this right away by how he calls his disciples. And the truth is, we all want deep, meaningful relationships with one another. We all want that. Right? Isn't this why we want to come to church? Isn't this why we want to be a part of church, part of a community that's not only bigger than us, but a community that will want a deep relationship with me? This is what I love about church. I've said this before, and I will continue to say this again. I love church because we have the opportunity to connect with people of different generations, people of different ages, that we have children, teenagers, we have middle age, older age, and still older age, people who are more wiser than me. And we get to have relationships with people here. And Jesus is no different. In fact, look at the verse that we just read that in Mark chapter 3. I want us to see how Jesus called these men. In Mark chapter 3, starting in verse 13. And he went up onto the mountain and summoned those whom he himself wanted, and they came to him. And he appointed 12, so that they would be with him, and that he could send them out to preach, and to have authority to cast out the demons. And he appointed the 12, Simon, whom he gave the name Peter, and James, the son of Zebedee, and John, the brother of James. To them he gave them the names, the sons of thunder, and Andrew, and Philip, and Bartholomew, and Matthew, and Thomas, and James, the son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus, and Simon the Zealot. And I love how verse 19, Judas gets his own verse. And Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. The first thing I want you to notice is that Jesus chose these people on his terms and required them to conform to his reality. He sat down and expected his disciples to come to him. He expects us to conform to his reality. See, the job of being a rabbi's disciple was a lifelong job of conforming to your master. The job was seen as highly prestigious and incredibly intimate. And along with your fellow followers, you ate, you talked, and you walked like the rabbi you chose to follow. If you wanted to be a disciple, you chose a master whom you wanted to become like. You wanted to become this man. You wanted to walk like him. You wanted to teach like him. You wanted to become like a rabbi, just like him. You were a disciple. This was your job. See, this is what makes John chapter 13, verse 3, when Jesus washes his disciples' feet, this is what makes this account so important, is because Jesus washes his disciples' feet and he expects them to do likewise. As a rabbi, he demonstrates what he wants his disciples to do, and he doesn't let up. He doesn't give them easy tasks. He doesn't tell them to take it easy. He says, if you want to be like me, you'll be last. You will wash each other's feet. You will be something different. You will do what I ask. See, this fosters an intimate bond among disciples. They knew each other's weaknesses and strengths. Do you know each other's weaknesses and strengths? Look across the auditorium. Do you know each other's weaknesses and strengths? Do you know each other's names? Do you know what the person sitting next to you is struggling with? What their sins are? What they need? What help do they require? And I think a more important question is, do you want to know? Do you want to know the person that you are sitting next to? Do you want to know who they are? What they are struggling with? What they are dealing with? What they have to go home to? When I read stories about kids growing up in youth groups, and I hear these, and I've been a part of youth groups where this was a common example. This was a common theme, where kids would grow up in abusive households, and they would live in this house for decades, and no one would know the abuse this kid was going through. But every day he would be going to church. Every day his family would be going to church, and no one would know what this family was doing. When I hear stories like that, it makes me upset. It makes me mad. When we sit across the aisle from strangers, people who we see day, week after week, year after year, and we can't even tell each other what our weaknesses are, what we're struggling with, what we're dealing with. See, these disciples, as dysfunctional as they are, they lived together. They learned together. When Jesus taught them, they heard together as a group. They did all of this as a group. And they knew each other. They knew each other's weaknesses. They knew each other's strengths. See, Jesus chose the faulty, the overzealous, the cowardly, the doubter, the murderer, the betrayer. He chose the suspicious, the religious, the overachiever, and the arrogant. He chose these men knowing who they were, and he saw what they were capable of doing. See, Jesus went into this relationship knowing what he was getting into, knowing who these men really were, knowing who and what their weaknesses are. He knew these men, and he chose them anyway. And this includes Judas. He lived alongside Judas for 3 years, working with him, loving him, empowering him. He spent 3 years building a bridge to this man, to the man that would betray him. Jesus was in a relationship with this person. We need to build bridges with people that may hurt us. We cannot allow our own insecurities to get in the way of connecting with difficult people. And if you're a part of a church, then you will get to know difficult people. We cannot allow our own insecurities to get in the way of connecting with difficult people. People that may be difficult to love. People that we may disagree with. In fact, if a church is made up of a population of people with similar political standings, similar beliefs, then there's an actual problem there. If a church is made up of solely of Republicans, then we have an issue. We need to go out and love the difficult people. The people that don't look like us. The people that don't act like us. I remember when I was a kid, I grew up in this Church of Christ in Grass Valley. And when I became a part of this, remember, when my mother took us here, the youth group was just me and my sister. And the congregation was 70 gray-haired, loving people. And they were amazing. They became my grandmothers and my grandfathers. They became my mentors. They became my family. And when we started, the church was dying. The church had lost its cultural relativity. It had lost its ability to connect with our culture. And so they hired Eli Hooper. And many of you know him. Many of you have heard him. And one of his first lessons that he gave in Grass Valley was to challenge this congregation to look for those who are in need of love, those who are going to look differently than us. And when I first heard this, I remembered, that's impossible. This is a Church of Christ, not only just a Church of Christ, but an older Church of Christ. What type of teenager is just going to stumble through those doors and want to be a part of this family? Man, about a year later, God just completely put me in my place, and he sent us Joey Lewis. Joey Lewis is about 6'4". He is about 240 pounds. He's a big boy. And what made him bigger was his gigantic pink mohawk. Yes, he was that type of guy. Yes, the difficult to love. Very opinionated, like your worst idea of a teenager, right? Everything was spiky leather and just made no sense. And he started coming to church. And he kept coming. And what was amazing is he just stumbled into the service. And he didn't go away. He wanted to be a part of this family. And he connected with the older members. He connected with those people that wanted to love him, that sought after that relationship, that wanted the people who didn't look like them, with the gigantic mohawks and the spiky shoulder pads. Joey Lewis's story is incredible. He's still in Grass Valley. He's married, has a couple of kids. He went in the military. All because of the relationships that people wanted to have with him. The love that the older members wanted to shower on this kid. And it changed his life forever. We cannot allow ourselves to get in our own way when it comes to loving those who may not want to be loved. Now, some people will think, as long as the other person is building in my direction, I will do the same. All that produces is half-built bridges, meaning that I will only connect with somebody as long as they're trying to connect with me. I will say hi to somebody as long as they look like they're walking in my directions about to say hi to me. Church cannot operate like this. A community cannot operate like this. All we get is half-built bridges. All we get are attempts at deep, meaningful relationships. What we get is, how are you doing? Fine. Well, tell me about your life. I'm okay. What are your struggles? Nothing. Shrugs. We must be known as people who will take the first steps of acceptance, whether or not they are reciprocated. We must be known as those people who will take and will initiate those relationships, that we will extend our hand first, that we will give hugs first, that we are willing to accept them for who they are first, before that relationship is even reciprocated towards us. This is what Jesus did to us. Amen? This is what Jesus did to each and every one of us. That Jesus first loved us.
Jesus first came down for us. That Jesus came down to this earth for us. We didn't go up to heaven and ask him. He came down because he loved us. That he loved the difficult people. He's our example. And he did this to Judas. And we all look at Judas and we look at this story of him and we blame him and we point our finger at him and say, how dare he? He had every chance to get this right. Why would Judas, why would anybody do what Judas did? Haven't we done the same thing? When we sin against Christ, when we sin against each other, aren't we doing the same thing that we accuse all of his apostles for doing? Luke chapter 6, verse 32 has one of the most difficult verses. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. It is easy to love people that are easy to love. It's easy to love people who think like you, who walk like you, who talk like you. But Jesus doesn't call us to just only do that. He calls us to look for Judas. He calls us and asks us to look for Peter, to look for the sinners, the people who just may not get it. See, Jesus did this with the 12, and he does this with us. And notice this, back in Mark chapter 3, even their names carry their own baggage. Look at even how he calls them. Simon, to whom he gives the name Peter, meaning small rock. He calls James and John, the sons of thunder. We have Thomas, who is known as the doubter. And then we have Judas, who is known as the betrayer. How would you like your one mistake to be known through eternity as a nickname? Right? Joe the nervous. Joe the oversweater. Right? I sweat as a profession. It's okay. It is really hot in here and these lights are burning me. How would you like that? Even as Jesus calls your name, Thomas, the confuser, please come forward. How? Even their names carry their own baggage. But you see, within small groups, we can deal with each other's real problems and sins. When we see each other's weaknesses and strengths, we can better confront our real enemy. And our real enemy isn't each other. It is not one another. When we form into small groups and we begin to discuss the real problems that our congregation, that our families, that we are having, we get to focus on the real enemy, on the real problem that we all share, that we all have in common, and it is not each other. This is what Satan wants. He wants us on our own, whether being lost in a crowd or at home refusing to go to church because you think you can do this without those hypocritical Christians. He wants you alone. You're easier to pick off that way. You're easier to pick off that way. Even when Jesus is by himself, Satan sees the opportunity and attacks him, not once, not twice, but thrice. Three times. Satan wants you by yourself. He wants you lost in a crowd. He wants you sitting by yourself in a pew with nobody else around you, nobody willing to reach across the aisle, shake your hand, and ask you, how can we serve you? He does not want that. In fact, he will go beyond what we imagine to get us by ourselves, to alienate us. He will get us arguing with each other over silly things because that alienates us. That burns bridges. And Satan does not want us to build bridges with each other. He wants us to be islands. He wants us to be individuals. People who come to a church building, sing some songs, maybe half listen to a really good sermon, and that's it. No connection. No bridges. No questions. No relationship. The devil wants you alone. And the truth is, we need each other. We need each other. And don't just look at me, look at everybody, man. I want you guys, we need one another. The person sitting next to you, the person sitting in front of you, the person 12 years younger than you, the person 50 years older than you. We need each other. We need the stories that we have, that you have. We need the families that you are growing. My children need more than just 4 grandparents. I want 20 grandparents for my kids. I had 20 grandparents. They were awesome. We need family. We need community. We desperately need this. Do you come to church desperately needing to commune with everybody here? Do you come to church because you want to hang out? You want to see what God is doing in the lives of the people next to you? Is that something that you have inside of you, burning inside of you? If not, man, we as your family are here to help you. We want to help you. We want you to be a part of this community, this nation of Christ. Finally, turn over to 1 Peter chapter 2, because we can never underestimate the power of a united community with a purpose. In 1 Peter, let's see if I can find it. In 1 Peter chapter 2, starting in verse 9, "But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who has called you out of the darkness into his marvelous light. For you once were not a people, but now you are the people of God. You had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against our soul. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, they may, because of your good deeds, as they observe them, glorifying God in the day of visitation." We can never underestimate the community that God has called us to. This small, united force that when he called these 12 apostles and he called them out of their world, out of their reality, and he asked them to conform to this Messiah, conform to Jesus' view of what this world truly is. We can't underestimate that. We can't underestimate a small force. God does not call his people so they can do whatever they want. This is the same deity that called his people out of an Egypt that he personally destroyed, to a mountain that they had to cross a sea to get to, all to receive a law that took 40 days to write down and 2 years to fully implement into their new society. This God that has called you out of this world to a new community, to a new group, this is the same God that called Israel out of Egypt. This is the same God that worked through the lives of Peter, James, and John. This God who is asking you to develop relationships with each other. This is the same God who asked Moses to go get his people. God wants us to build bridges so his people can move on. God does not call us to be comfortable, to stay still, to warm a pew, to take it easy, or to do nothing as God does all the heavy lifting. God does not call you to sit still. He wants you to move. He wants you to interact with one another. He wants you to get messy with the lives of those people sitting next to you. This is what God has been building us towards. This is what God has been working us towards since the beginning of time, so that we can depend upon each other. Our safety is not guaranteed. In John chapter 15, verse 19, "If you were of the world would love you as its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you." Our greatest tools will be hope, faith, love, and our community. Our community of fellow people who are hated by this world. Fellow disciples who, when they heard Jesus tell us to wash each other's feet, to love the helpless, the homeless, to serve the orphans and the widows, that we are serving alongside like-minded people. People who heard their Savior call us to go out into this world, to be a holy nation, to be a priesthood, to be something bigger, something more. Creation started with a purpose, and so does our new lives in Jesus. And so does our small church community here in Ventura. Look at how these men began their ministry and see in front of your eyes the impact these men had on our history, our culture, and our humanity. And it all started with a small group of people dedicating their lives to God's mission. Here in Ventura, we are full of sinners, people full of mistakes, people who are in need of Jesus Christ, people who are in need of Him to be our rabbi. We don't have it all down. We may not have it all right. But we have the same purpose, the same mission that these disciples, that these apostles had. And that is to follow God wherever He leads us. To take His message across this world, starting here in Ventura. Small groups equipped with Jesus' commission, enabled by His Spirit, and challenged to love everybody, can and will change the world. We can start by focusing on these connecting structures that we have with each other. And it begins with our small groups. And not only the small groups that we have on Wednesday night, but going beyond that. My vision for small groups is that we have every member in this building a part of a small group. That in some way we have home groups meeting in every part of Ventura, including the Avenue. That we have small groups in Santa Paula. We have small groups in Camarillo and in Oxnard. We have people worshiping everywhere, all throughout the week, not just on Wednesday. That we have groups of individuals, of believers who are struggling, who are forgiving, who are asking for forgiveness, that we have the meeting everywhere. And the world will be changed. The world will be changed. Look at our culture today. Look at what 12 men were able to accomplish and how they started and where they finished. Getting to know each other is going to be difficult. It's going to be hard. It's full of risks. We're going to have to learn each other's names. And more than that, we're going to want to learn each other's weaknesses, each other's sins, and each other's struggles. If you wish to be a part of a small group, a community of Christ followers and searchers, people who will lift you up, hold you accountable, who will ask for forgiveness and offer mercy in return, we have host homes in Camarillo, Ventura, Santa Paula. And I ask you, I plead with you to be a part of this group in some way. It's for our families. It's for us here in Ventura so that we can have more chances to get to know one another. So if you have any needs, please stand as we sing.